A Your Vote 2012 conversation with William Schneider, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. Bill Schneider is one of six Republicans vying for the chance to compete for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Olympia Snow this fall. Schneider, who currently serves as Maine's Attorney General, is a graduate of West Point and former assistant U.S. Attorney. He's hoping his message as a fiscal conservative who will emphasize individual freedom and homeland security will resonate with Republican voters next month. I'm Keith Shortall, and in this final Your Vote 2012 primary candidate interview, we'll talk with Schneider about why he's running and about the issues he believes are most important to the people of Maine. Join the conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a message to the Maine Calling Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. William Schneider, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. This is Maine Calling. And Bill Schneider, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So Republican voters this primary on June 12th have no shortage of choices before them in this Senate race. There are six, as we just mentioned. Why should they choose you?
Well, I think I bring a unique combination of experience and credentials to the race. I think that my military experience, my experience as a leader throughout my career, and the public service that I've undertaken make me uniquely qualified to be our next U.S. senator.
Are there major differences in ideology that Republicans could also look to you for?
There are some differences. I think that I have the right idea about how to attack our debt and our deficits that we've been running up over the last few years. I think I'm insistent on the idea that it's important for the federal government to have a budget. We've been nearly 4 years now without a budget. And without the budget, we've been spending over $1 trillion each year over what we take in. As a matter of fact, 40 cents of every dollar the federal government spends right now is borrowed money. And I think we need a budget to get that under control.
Related to the deficit and to the budget is the economy in general, which affects people directly here in Maine. What would be your prescription for stimulating the economy, or is indeed that the business of the federal government at all?
Really good question. I think the idea that government creates jobs is a wrong idea. I think government creates the landscape in which jobs can grow. So I think the more government can get out of the way and establish a healthy climate for jobs to grow, I think the more those jobs are going to grow.
And when you say get out of the way, does that mean easing back regulations?
Or? Sure. I think that means regulatory reform. And I think one good idea is Senator Rand Paul's idea about requiring any regulation that's going to have over $100 million impact on the economy to be approved by Congress. I think that's a really common sense approach to making sure that large impactful regulations are not imposed merely by bureaucrats.
So is there anything else that, I'm thinking about tax policy. Is there anything in the way of tax policy that could be done to stimulate the economy?
Sure. I think a fairer, flatter tax would do a lot to stimulate the economy. We're in a situation right now where nearly 50% of wage earners don't pay any taxes at all. And I think if we had a fairer, flatter tax system, everybody who has a stake in good government would have a chance to make an impact there.
Now, and when you use the word fair tax, some people might think you just mean it's more fair, but there's actually a capital F fair tax, which is a structure that's proposed, which would basically eliminate income tax and replace it with an across-the-board sales tax.
Right, and that's not what I'm advocating. I think we need to rehab our income tax system. I think the fact that we have 72,000 pages of regulations to enforce our income tax system is wrong. The purpose of taxes is to provide the money the federal government needs to run. It's not to make economic policy. And over the past how many years, we've been using the tax code to make economic policy.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. That's 1-800-399-3566. We're talking with Bill Schneider, a Republican for U.S. Senate. On tax policy, would you oppose increasing the tax on capital gains?
I would. I think the lower level on capital gains is essential to continue to make our economy thrive. I think the fact that the idea behind the lower level on capital gains is to have that money encouraged to be reinvested in the economy to help businesses grow.
Another major concern here, although as we just heard in the weather forecast, it will be unseasonably warm over the weekend. but we just came out of the winter, and people are probably still paying off some of their oil bills. What should Congress or can Congress do to help ease the burden of energy costs?
There's a lot that Congress can do. I think our energy policy needs to focus on the United States providing its own energy. I think we need to look to all the sources of oil and natural gas and all the other sources of energy that are available to us. And I think the guiding principle needs to be what is most economically viable. What forms of energy are the most economical? And I think in that way, if we do that, the free market will operate to make sure that those forms of energy are more available.
And of course, we're using a lot of oil now. Would you support more domestic drilling and or offshore drilling?
You bet. Absolutely. I think we owe it to ourselves to provide as much of our energy supply as we can and not to buy it from the Middle East, from Saudi kings and Venezuelan dictators. I think it's important for us to provide our own oil to the maximum extent possible.
And would you support expanded use of nuclear power?
I absolutely do. I think, and again, if it makes economic sense, I think we need to look at the whole life cycle of nuclear power, from building the plant to disposing of the nuclear fuel. But in a lot of cases, that does make economic sense, and it's a good, clean means of providing energy.
There's been a lot of talk during this campaign about incentives for energy producers. On the one side, oil companies who are making pretty good profits, and then on the other side, alternative forms of energy that critics say, well, they don't quite make economic sense, so why should we subsidize them? Where do you stand on using federal tax incentives to promote or shore up energy production?
I think the federal government, by and large, shouldn't have a role in providing tax incentives. I think that's part of the big problem that we've been trying to accomplish economic policy through the tax code. I think it, as forms of energy become available and become more economical, they will rise to the level that they should.
So you would not support subsidies for oil companies either?
Well, that's part of it. Yeah, I think, again, that's another case in which we're, as part of the whole tax code, as part of looking at the whole tax code, I think we need to look at eliminating or reducing, anyway, those areas in which we're trying to make economic policy through the tax code.
Let's move to health care, big subject. Well, let's start with your take on the Affordable Care Act.
That's great. When President Obama's Affordable Care Act first passed, this was before I was even Attorney General, I was a keen observer, and I saw that there were a couple provisions in it that were, to my mind, unconstitutional. And so my one promise to the legislature before I was elected was that if I was elected as Attorney General, I would find a way to challenge the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. So within a couple of weeks, I had linked up with the Attorney General in Florida and 25 other states and joined their lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act.
Is that the individual mandate part of it, or are there other provisions that are questionable?
There are two main provisions that are unconstitutional. It's the individual mandate that requires every American to go out and buy a commercial product, health insurance, that's been defined by Congress. That just isn't within the powers of Congress to do. If you you have to look at the Constitution and know why. When the founders originally set up the Constitution, they set it up to recognize that the power lies with the people, and that the people were giving certain enumerated powers to the federal government in order to allow them to govern. But anything that's not given to the federal government is reserved to the people or the states. So Congress doesn't have the power to make you and I go buy something specific like that. The argument on the other side is that the Commerce Clause allows it. But this would be the first time in history that the Commerce Clause has been applied to allow Congress to require people to actively go out and join the stream of commerce.
So how much of this hangs on defining that mandate as a tax versus something else?
A lot of it. And if Congress had had the courage, the political courage, to make it a tax, it probably would have been constitutional. But Congress was trying to dance around it. And in the course of that, they came up with this individual mandate idea, and that is not constitutional.
So let's assume then, just for our purposes, that maybe they get around that and change the law and it passes constitutional muster. What about the larger question of a government expanding its authority to provide access and affordability for more people?
Well, the first thing you should know is that the Affordable Care Act is not affordable. There's a government accounting office study that shows that the Affordable Care Act actually increases the cost of health care to Americans. And it increases just not only the cost of health care, but it's going to require almost $2 trillion of additional tax money to keep that system alive over the next decade. So there's nothing affordable about the Affordable Care Act.
So what would you do then, or again, indeed, is it government's role in this case, but how could we improve access to health care?
I would like to see the government set up a system where health insurance is more available across state lines so that there would be more competition, and groups of companies or nonprofit corporations, groups could come together to use their buying power to reduce the cost of health insurance. I'd also like to see the cost of our individual health care more available. For example, if you and I knew that the cost of a blood test in Bangor was $300, and we knew that the cost in Lewiston was $200, and we could get some portion of that savings, maybe in a reduced health insurance price or something like that, we'd drive to Lewiston in order to get that blood test. And I think doing that, making those costs more available, providing incentives for people to shop around, would rapidly drive down the actual costs of health care to consumers.
I've heard some Republicans point to tort reform as another possible solution, and putting your attorney hat on there. Do you agree?
Certainly. Tort reform is certainly possible. We just have to make sure we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. We need to make sure that people who are injured still have a recourse. But certainly some tort reform would be reasonable.
A couple of social issue questions. Do you agree with the Roe v. Wade decision on abortion?
Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, and I accept that. I think it's unfortunate that abortions are used, but it's the law of the land. I think it's a question that the federal government shouldn't be involved with, by and large, that ought to be left up to a woman and her partner and her physician and her spiritual counselor.
Do you support same-sex marriage?
I don't.
That's it. No, just no.
That's it.
Okay, very good. Well, with that, we'll take a short break. And when we come back, more of your questions and comments. Our guest today is Maine Attorney General William Schneider. He's a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Florence Williams talks about breasts, why they're prone to cancer, why children are developing breasts at an earlier age, and why breast milk may have toxins. She sent her own breast milk to a lab, and they found
high to average levels of flame retardants, trace amounts of pesticides, dioxin, and a jet fuel ingredient.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN radio or MPBN television, visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information, or call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com. And by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, a Your Vote 2012 interview with William Schneider, Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We've been asking the candidates throughout here about Medicare and Social Security. There are varying degrees of opinion as to the solvency of either program, but let's talk about Social Security. Is it a program that you think must be saved and shored up, A? And B, if so, how do we do that?
I think absolutely. Social Security is a program that must survive. It's in desperate financial trouble right now. And my understanding is that by 2020, it will be broke if we don't make some changes. I think the way to fix it is to grandfather the people who are fairly close to relying on Social Security and make it, after that, live within its budget. Set up a system so that the income to Social Security better matches the outflow. And that's the secret to having it exist in the long term.
Do you support means testing?
Perhaps. I think for upper income people who wouldn't necessarily, for whom the pension wouldn't make a difference, I think that would not be a bad idea.
And maybe upping the qualification ages, retirement age to 90. It seems like that's the way it's heading.
Yeah, but honestly, the ages that are in place right now are pretty reasonable. I think taking into account the working lifetime of a person, the initial intent of Social Security was to have it be an insurance policy and to have it make sure that people, when they retire, when they get to retirement agency or age rather, don't live out their lives destitute. And I think if we got back to that idea, we'd be a lot better.
One of the reasons cited by Senator Olympia Snowe for retiring after so many years in Washington was a frustration with what she perceived as a partisan gridlock that was getting in the way of Congress doing the people's business, and a kind of loss of decorum in the Senate, which upset her. Do you see that as a major issue? And if so, how would you get around that, or how would you deal with that?
I think it's certainly an issue. I don't think it's necessarily a major issue. I feel bad about the loss of decorum in our institutions and even in society to some extent. It's nicer if people are polite to one another. I've been a leader throughout my career. Starting in the military, I was actually trained as a leader at West Point. I've faced a number of difficult things in my life. Not least amongst them was when I got injured on active duty, and that's why I use a wheelchair right now. But every time I faced a difficulty, I have persevered and pushed through and accomplished the mission. So I think the leadership and the dedication to the mission and public service that I bring to the position is what will serve me well in Washington.
As a graduate of West Point, I want to also ask you about some foreign policy questions, specifically The U.S. Approach in Iraq and Afghanistan, those are two separate issues, but let's do one at a time.
Sure.
Looking back and currently, what would you do differently?
Well, in Afghanistan, the case is that that was the base of the attacks of 9/11. When I worked as an anti-terrorism coordinator for the U.S. Attorney's Office, I did quite a bit of work on the conditions that existed prior to 9/11 that allowed al-Qaeda to train operatives there, to make their preparations and make their plans relatively unmolested by any power. They were able before 9/11 to spend 100% of their time planning attacks against the West. Then we went into Afghanistan to deny al-Qaeda and the Taliban that base. And the situation now is that leaders of al-Qaeda and leaders of the Taliban are on the run for their lives. And they have very little time left to plan attacks against the United States and the rest of the West. So I think that's exactly what we need to be doing.
Yeah, Iraq, was that were we wise to go in?
Well, you have to go back to the what we believed at the time about Iraq. We had Saddam Hussein and his sons Uday and Qusay, who were running a brutal dictatorship, and they were using chemical weapons on their own people. And we were concerned, and we had intelligence showing that they were stockpiling chemical weapons. They were stockpiling the means to build a nuclear weapon, and I think at the time, That was the right thing to do. Unfortunately, intelligence is a game of predictions, and intelligence is never 100%. So as it turned out, that intelligence was not true, that Saddam Hussein had been running a very sophisticated program to make that appearance to the rest of the world. And so
in terms of timetable for withdrawal of troops?
From Afghanistan?
From either.
Well, our troops are pretty much withdrawn from Iraq at the moment. We now have a few troops left over to provide advisory services and things like that. In Afghanistan, I think we need to stay there until we can be sure that al-Qaeda and the Taliban can't reestablish themselves and use that as a base.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Brooklyn. And Rob. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
My question is simply, Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution gives the Congress the power to raise taxes, fees, and so on and so forth. I don't remember exactly. To support the general welfare of the United States. I'd like Mr. Schneider's definition in his mind of what general welfare means.
Thank you, Rob. Actually, what that is that's the provision that allows Congress to tax for...
Just hold it 1 second. Rob, you need to turn your radio down, please.
It is. It's not even on.
Oh, okay. Strange that we're hearing some feedback. Anyway.
We've got a bad echo here.
I'll answer off the phone, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
That provision of the Constitution is what allows Congress to raise taxes in order to form the government and to finance the government. That's what the founders were referring to when they talked about the general welfare.
Okay, and we had to get rid of Rob because of because
sorry
of that.
Sorry about that, Rob.
Anyway, let's try. Let's go to Yarmouth and Ben. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I have a question. I always hear about shopping across state lines as far as health insurance. If you do have an issue, then under what laws would you be subjected to? In other words, would they fall under Maine law, and would your jurisdiction be in Maine law, or would you be subjected to another state's laws?
Good question, Ben. If a company is doing business in the state of Maine, they are subjecting themselves to Maine law. Now, a lot of times you'll find, if you read the contract that you're signing carefully, you'll find that in the contract may be an agreement to arbitrate under the laws of another state. So if you're concerned about where any kind of dispute is going to be resolved, you need to read your contract carefully and make sure that there's not a clause in it that requires you to arbitrate somewhere else. But any company generally that does business in the state of Maine is submitting itself to Maine's laws.
What's the difference then, supposedly, from a company having its base in Maine versus already interstate companies in Maine doing business versus shopping across state borders? I'm not understanding how that would save money.
Well, what it would allow is it would allow insurance companies that aren't that don't have a specific product in Maine to enter the competition for Maine healthcare insurance dollars. It would allow somebody, say, in Colorado, a company in Colorado, to offer its products that it has to people in the state of Maine. They would still have to register in Maine and actually that's another means by which they submit themselves to Maine laws. But if you look at the Maine legislature and the governor last session did a terrific job of rehabbing the individual insurance market. And they passed a bill, I think it was LD 1333, that is now law, that allows interstate competition for health insurance. It set up kind of a high-risk pool so that people who have pre-existing conditions can buy the same health insurance products for the same prices as anybody else. It was really a terrific, groundbreaking piece of legislation.
Will any evidence emerge from that legislation that this can save?
I certainly expect so.
And by when? When?
I think it'll emerge over time. I think as it has a chance to be more and more well used, I think the evidence will emerge.
Ben, does that sound good? I guess we'll take it. Yeah, we'll take it as a yes. 1-800-399-3566, the number to join the conversation today with Maine Attorney General William Schneider, a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Bath and Mariah. Hi, Mariah.
Hello. Hi. I just want to say that I'm surprised that you are for nuclear power. You are perhaps unaware, I hope you are not, that we have high-level nuclear power waste on our coast. And I wish you would talk with our people in Augusta who have to deal with that.
And Mariah, in the interest of full disclosure, you are a former legislator and anti-Maine Yankee activist. Is that fair to say?
I am, but I worked hard for other things, not just against nuclear power, but for other good things.
Sure.
In my dear state of Maine. I was born and brought up here, and I'm 82 years old, and I just am so discouraged that younger, smart people who want to be in public office are pro-nuclear. That surprises me.
Mariah, does this have to do, obviously it has to do with the cost of energy that wasn't as much of an issue back when the problems were happening with Maine Yankee or the storage?
No,
on the front page?
About the cost.
Mm-hmm.
When I was very young, I was very concerned about the fallout from bombs. When you know nuclear power plants make smaller amounts, but they do have some of the worst things. I mean, plutonium, a long time ago when I was very young, there was very little ever found. But after nuclear power came on the scene for bombs, and Eisenhower, bless his heart, said, no, we don't want it to be just destructive and horrible. We'll make it peaceful and have power from it. But right here on our main coast, we have pounds and pounds of plutonium right here on the coast in Wiscasset, and nobody knows what the hell to do with it. I would like to know. You know, when these people come out and say they want to be leaders of our government and all, and we have all these other environmental problems that make kids sick. Yes, I know that. I'm an old nurse. But when they go on and say we should have more nuclear power, I just feel like falling off my crutches.
Okay. I've got to go to take a break here in a minute, Mariah, but let's let Bill Schneider respond.
Well, thank you, Mariah, and I hope you're including me in that smart young category of public servants. I think I'm actually a fan of the Yucca Mountain storage facility that is almost completely built. I've been down to visit the former site of Maine Yankee, and I've seen the casks with the nuclear fuel in them. It's a very secure, very safe facility, and those casks are just awaiting a long-term disposal solution.
I don't think Mariah is going to agree, but anyway, we're going to take a short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions for Bill Schneider, a Republican for U.S. Senate. Please stay with us.
Hey, this is Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We have traveled all over the country with our show, but never to Maine, because whenever we asked one of you guys how to get there, you'd always say, well, you can't get there from here, and you'd laugh, and we were like, what? But we used Google Maps, and we figured it out. So we will be at the Merrill Auditorium in Portland on Thursday, August 9th. Tickets go on sale Friday, May 18th, with a special members presale beginning Wednesday, May 16th. For tickets and information, go to mpbn.net or go to our website, waitwait.npr.org.
Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, garand.com. And by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill. Join us after Maine Calling today for Alternative Radio. The guest is William Black, Associate Professor of Economics and Law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, former Litigation Director of the Federal Home Loan Bank Board and Senior Deputy Chief Counsel of the Office of Thrift Supervision. That's Alternative Radio this afternoon at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a Your Vote 2012 interview with Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, William Schneider, Maine's Attorney General and a graduate of West Point. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go to Bath and Bobby. Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Yes, what's your question?
I'm calling about, I would like some clarification on what he meant by the fact that he said that he did not support same-sex marriage. Does he not support the right of same-sex marriage, of couples being able to do that, or does he morally oppose it but isn't going to prevent people from doing it?
I support civil unions, and I support equal treatment of gay folks when they entered into those civil unions. I wouldn't object to someone who has a marriage performed by somebody who wanted to. I just don't think that the government should have a role in enforcing institutions to carry out those ceremonies.
But can you? Do you know what the difference between a civil union and being able to be legally married is?
I do to some extent, sure.
So Bobby, is somebody that is in a civil union, are they able to have the same tax benefits as somebody that's married?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, Bobby. All right, Bobby, thanks for calling. 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. 3566. Let's go to Gorham and John. Hi, John.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to ask William about if he were elected going to Washington, would he be one of Norquist's boys, if you will? That is, take the no tax pledge, and I'm hearing more about the no compromise pledge. Just wanting, like to know his input in that.
Yeah, you're referring to Grover Norquist,
the one, the only.
Yes. Okay.
Well, I plan to take one pledge, and that is to support and defend the Constitution when I'm sworn in as a senator, and I'm not going to take any other pledges. I think you can take a look at my voting record when I was in the House of Representatives, and I never once voted for a tax increase, but I didn't need a pledge to make those decisions.
Well, that's refreshing to hear. In other words, at least you be your own person.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and
oh, I guess we've lost John. Sorry about that, John. 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to Socko and Bob. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to follow up on Bobby's call about same-sex marriage.
And okay, go ahead.
I'm glad to hear he's willing to swear to uphold the Constitution, because my feelings on same-sex marriage is I believe the First Amendment of the United States Constitution prohibits the United States government from passing any law that establishes a state religion. And if you turn around and you ban same-sex marriage, when same-sex marriage is recognized in many different religions, you're actually establishing a state religion. And I'd like to have him address that issue, please.
Well, the First Amendment is actually part of my rationale for opposing same-sex marriage. And it's because by the federal government or the state government requiring same-sex marriages to be conducted, that is the in part establishment of a religion. I think I would allow any religion that wants to conduct same-sex marriages or any person who is so inclined to do so, but I don't think that it's the job of the federal or the state government to mandate that.
So you would not actually vote for banning same-sex marriage because you would find that unconstitutional?
Say that again?
You would not vote in favor of banning same-sex marriage because you would find that unconstitutional?
Right. I wouldn't vote for it, but if someone wants to conduct a same-sex marriage, they're welcome to.
I approve that stance. Thank you.
All right, Bob, thanks for calling. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to the center of the universe, also known as Thomaston. And Eliza. Hi, Eliza. Welcome to the program. I'm biased because I'm from Thomaston, but anyway.
Great. Well, thank you for taking my call, and thank you, Mr. Schneider, for your really clear opinions and stance on the issues you've spoken to so far. My question is, if you, and I assume you do, notice that our climate is changing, what would you do if you were elected to bring that discussion to the forefront of our national scene?
That's a great question. I think I agree. I think I am an observer of the climate just like everybody else, and I think the climate has been changing throughout the history of the world. I think it certainly is a matter for discussion. I think it is not settled yet whether mankind has a big influence on that or not. I think we could use some more scientific research in that area. So I think increased discussion of that would be a healthy thing.
May I respond?
Yes, please go ahead.
I think if you look at the research, it's there and it's clear. And anybody that says we need additional scientific research has not read the research that's out there. So I would ask you directly, have you personally looked into the research that exists?
I've read some, but certainly not anywhere near all of it.
Well, I would urge you to continue to do that because, in my mind, the acidification of the oceans and the Earth's climate change are probably the most urgent questions that we face as a country and as a world, and there is no discussion whatsoever on our national level of this, and I think that is totally absurd.
And I'd certainly be interested in learning more.
Eliza, thanks for joining the program. Let's go now to Brunswick and Chris. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on to ask this question. This is kind of along the same lines, but Mr. Schneider, you were talking about as far as energy and different solutions for energy, you were talking about what makes economic sense, but you make little or no reference to what makes ecological sense. So my question is, I guess, basically, does what makes economic sense precedent over what takes ecological sense, and what goes into your decision making when you go to vote on these issues, when you're weighing out both of those very crucial issues?
Sure, those both factor into the decision, absolutely. And something that has an ecological impact also has an economic impact. And I think that certainly needs to be taken into account.
Any follow-up, Chris?
Yes. No, I understand. You know, that's sort of a broad answer. Thank you. But also just in reference to the caller before, as far as climate change, you know, one great resource for that is what's going on with the weather labs out of Yale University. The director of climate change research over there is, you know, he talks pretty much nonstop, even on this station, about climate change and the fact that it's indisputable, and that, you know, any scientist who isn't necessarily, you know, paid to have a biased opinion is, you know, it's unequivocal as far as, you know, climate change. So I definitely encourage you to look into those issues very thoroughly.
All right, Chris, thanks for calling. We have time for one more. Let's go to Little Deer Isle and Becky. Hi, Becky. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Okay, here's my question. What do you think about captured markets and free markets, and is healthcare a captured market or part of the free market system, and your understanding of captured markets?
Got about 30 seconds left. It's like graduate school.
Right, exactly. Well, I think I'm a big proponent of the free market, and I think the free market has a powerful ability to affect things like healthcare and healthcare insurance. And my thoughts about healthcare insurance are that we ought to do things to make the free market more influential in that system.
And your idea of captured markets, is healthcare a captured market?
I think it ought to be much more of a free market aspect.
Can I describe captured as something, as a necessity that you can't do without, versus something that you can?
Sure.
Ooh. All right.
And
well,
how do you see that in the marketplace working?
Sorry, Becky, but we're out of time. Appreciate your call, though. Bill, thanks for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
William Schneider, the state's attorney general and a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. This concludes our Your Vote 2012 series of interviews. You can listen to our conversations with all of the primary candidates for U.S. Senate and House Districts 1 and 2 by visiting our Facebook page or going to mpbn.net. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer, Cindy Hahn, answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had additional help from the MPBN web team. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.